Be happy in every life. We have some trouble, but when you worry.
Hello, this is Gail Moskowitz, and I thank you for listening to Mental Health Matters. I wish you all a happy new year. I hope you had wonderful holiday time, and you're back to work, invigorated and ready for a new year. The topic of today's show is Healer, Heal Thyself. You're listening to Mental Health Matters, and as you know, it's a program dedicated to issues pertaining to mental health, interpersonal relations, addiction, sex and sexuality, and discussing healthy ways in which to live a more thoughtful and emotionally honest and fulfilling life. This week, we will highlight issues associated with taking care of yourself while you're taking care of other people. There are a lot of people in the world who provide hands-on, one-on-one health care, mental health care to individuals who are overwhelming, exhausting, have a lot of needs. And my guest today, whose name is Kelly Humes, she's a social worker, and she believes very strongly that individuals who work in the helping fields must tend to their own mental health in order to stay healthy and effective. Today, if you'd like to speak to me or to Kelly, please feel free to call 649-9737, 649-9737. Mental Health Matters comes to you every Thursday at 1 p.m. on WRIR 97.3 FM. You can listen to us on your computer in real time, or you can by going on to WRIR's website, www.wrir.org, or you can listen to the archived shows, which will be available for you to listen to tonight, as well as all the other shows that Mental Health Matters has produced. And you can get to those shows by getting onto the WRIR website and clicking Mental Health Matters. And that'll take you to my website. So let's get started. Kelly, welcome to the program.
Hi, Gail. Thank you so much for inviting me.
I'm really glad that you're here. And so clearly this topic is one that really touches me personally in a profound kind of way. I've been in the mental health field for a very long time. And I do have to say that there have been stages of exhaustion in treating people and stages of exhilaration, and that's come and gone over the years. So I know that your journey is probably at an earlier stage as in the helping field. So you would talk to me a little bit about the clients that you were working with and how they were on some level crippled by their own diagnoses, that and I want to know a little bit about what the diagnostic labels were of your clients.
Sure, and I think the diagnostic labels and all of the issues that the clients that I've dealt with and my colleagues have dealt with, they all contribute to what feels like an endless battle for myself and other mental health professionals. So some of the diagnoses that I personally have seen, as well as my coworkers, we deal a lot with anxiety disorders, some depression, certainly. We've seen clients with post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, the younger kids present with, you know, ADHD, the conduct disorder, oppositional defiant. All of those labels, all of those diagnoses, rather, have, presented with a list of criteria that these clients have met, a history of patterns of thought and behavior that set them up to struggle. And the sad truth is, the more informed, the more educated these clients are about their diagnoses, the more they can feel crippled by them. The criteria states that you have a pervasive pattern of X, Y, or Z, a feeling of abandonment, a fear of social situations. All of these things tell you that you're unable to succeed in various ways.
So what you're saying is that what you have found among these this population of clients, people who have severe diagnoses, are so labeled by that diagnosis that they see everything about themselves only through that lens?
It's certainly a case-by-case basis, but I would say what you've just described does happen, mm-hmm. you know, more often than not. I think that's
so,
true.
Can you tell me a little bit about what it is like to treat these individuals in an intensive community-based program? What was it like for you?
Sure. And most of my experience thus far does come from a community-based program, which for those of our listeners that don't know what that is, that comes in the form of intensive in-home or mental health support, both of which are holistic approaches to treating individuals in the community. You're actually in these clients' homes. You're facilitating many different parts of their lives, doctor's appointments. In a lot of cases, it comes in the form of securing food, shelter, and safety, which is where the compassion fatigue piece comes in, because often you can get lost in ensuring those things on a daily basis and rarely get to address treatment goals, which are, you know, our ultimate objective is to address things that will be long-lasting and permanent and allow these clients to succeed.
So it's, in a way, the whole that old adage about if you give a man a fish, he'll eat for a day, and if you teach the man to fish, he'll eat for his whole life. Does it feel like that you're constantly passing out fish?
It does. It does. And it's at no fault of their own, just a reality of the environment they are existing in, which, you know, can kind of spin off into several different conversations there. But certainly the immediate needs have to be met before we can get any further. And there is a kind of a cycle of meeting immediate needs and not tending to treatment goals as, you know, as prescribed.
So you're in these intense, connected relationships with people who are exceedingly needy. So talk a little about the difficulties that workers and clients have with boundaries. Because I could see you really losing the boundaries working in such an in-home intense situation. Does that happen?
Sure, it does. And it's a hot topic, and it's something that we all are, you know, we're kind of obligated, not kind of, we're very much obligated to maintain those boundaries. And it proves difficult and, again, can be a contributor to the compassion fatigue piece. Working in a community-based program, like I mentioned, you're in their homes. It is nearly inevitable to avoid your clients being in your vehicle, transporting. Pretty typical that a client will see a book that you've got in your backseat, listen to you accept a phone call, watch you interact in the community. And all of these situations offer an opportunity for clients to see you in a more personal light, which is unavoidable but can set you up for a different dynamic. These clients are often lacking support and friendship and any kind of connection, so you take on that role whether you mean to or not. If they can relate with you on a more personal basis, it seems like a great idea, but certainly we all know it can get dangerous if they want to relate to you on that level.
Well, I mean, even in, you know, in any situation where you're in, sometimes what I tell people I do for a living is that I have intense interpersonal relationships with people. And it is true. I mean, for people to trust you, to talk to you, to unveil themselves to you, it's a privilege. And it's exhausting. And so even in an office setting, even, you know, in a once a week office setting, those boundaries can become intense and exhausting, because you might share a little bit of yourself and that boundary can become really distorted.
Sure.
So I can really see that happening in the kind of intense situations you're talking about. So let me ask you this. Talk about how you see therapists become disheartened or exhausted or discouraged.
Right. All the things that we have talked about, the criteria for the diagnoses that these clients have and the vulnerability that a mental health provider can feel in the community, you know, and what can seem like a vicious cycle or pattern with these clients can really set up a therapist or a caseworker or a social worker to feel as if they're not having an impact, because a lot of these dynamics present repeatedly. And, you know, for myself, I have really invested in connecting with some of those dynamics that make you feel effective or remind you that you are effective. It's easy to forget that. I have a program that really kind of is invested in a concept about results. I think our profession is one that doesn't offer results so much. You may be just planting a seed that doesn't, you know, manifest for many years down the road, and to remind yourself that that's still your part is imperative. So I, like you mentioned, I'm fairly new in this field. I have colleagues, coworkers that are feeling disheartened or disenchanted and are ready to just reevaluate the appropriateness of their profession for them. And I am really encouraging people to kind of reframe their thinking about their work. You're certainly not starting with a product and finishing with a new product at the end of any day. You're likely to take one step forward and 10 steps back. And I think just remaining aware of that reality can maybe, you know, at minimum help people power through, you know, a week or two of working, just knowing that you're a piece, you're one step in a.
I think that's a very important thought. I really do. Sometimes we talk about in this field about doing pre-therapy. Mm-hmm. So you're with somebody for a period of time, just sort of socializing them to the process before they can even begin to figure out how they might partake in what you have to offer them. People have to mature. It takes time. You're absolutely right. So if you can see that you're a part of the process of it, and that you're not going to start out with one product and come up with this new and improved product, I think that's really sensible. That makes a lot of sense to me. One of the things that you talk about with your clients is that it sounds as if their whole lives are involved in the dysfunction. So I wonder, if you could talk a little bit about the cycle of how much trauma is involved in their lives, the cycle of trauma in the lives of individuals, and how much mental illness becomes a part of that, and how much mental illness fuels that, and how much the trauma fuels the mental illness. But before you do that, I just want to say, this is Gail Moskowitz. You're listening to Mental Health Matters. We're talking today about the process of working with people who have mental illness and other severe kinds of disorders, where it's difficult on a day-to-day basis to give of yourself and to heal and to be part of the healing and still stay strong and healthy for yourself. Healer, heal thyself. We're talking to Kelly Humes, and she has some very good thoughts about this. So back to you, Kelly. And if you'd like to call today and talk to either Kelly or me, you're welcome to call in at 649-9737. So talk to me about trauma.
The cycle of trauma that you inquired about usually is more frequent than not. I can't recall a case for myself or any of my colleagues where we were the first provider to be in a home. Typically, we're, you know, at the end of a long list of different kind of mental health providers that have tried to address any number of issues in the home. The reality is we're often dealing with generational poverty, which brings with it high incidence of domestic violence or substance abuse, you know, all those tragedies that usually play out simultaneously. It can also be a contributor to the fatigue involved if you feel as if you are, looking for a needle in a haystack. The main thing is, again, to come back to the fact that you're planting seeds that may have an effect down the road. I've had the pleasure of knowing that that's the case for me a few times, and certainly, inadvertently affected someone else in the home with my presence by just exposing or referring them to a resource that they would have not otherwise known. And that speaks to some of the, you know, the great benefits of intensive in-home, is becoming aware of other vicious cycles that are playing out within that family versus just addressing that one individual. Even just pointing out the patterns that play out within that family has been a therapeutic tool for myself. Often if someone exists in a level of dysfunction, there's no frame of reference for what is healthy. So just being in there and doing an assessment of sorts and kind of guiding your client through that, you know, coupled with exposure to a healthier lifestyle can be a treatment in itself and really a good opportunity to expose them to, you know, a healthier way of living.
So on some level, you talk, as you talk about these and about the individuals that you're treating with severe diagnoses and that their life is traumatic, that it's almost a daily grind for them of dealing with the aftermath of the dysfunction, that the dysfunction breeds dysfunction.
Very much so.
Because there's no ways out. They don't recognize there are tools to get healthier, to make better decisions.
Right. And that almost speaks to the pre-therapy. There's almost a pre-triage. If you enter a home, that you've got, you know, a dozen different dynamics that an outsider or a mental health professional would see as needing to be addressed. And it could be living arrangements or intimate relationships that are playing out in the home, substance abuse, domestic violence, added to mental illness. And it's almost as if you could go in there and just kind of rearrange or make a map of how things should be and then work on that for the initial 6 months. And then, you know, to even begin to do, you know, cognitive restructuring beyond that is a whole nother chapter of treatment.
So let's begin to talk about, there are many, many people who work in the healing professions who's become fatigue. And I want to talk about some of the ways in which we can stay more whole and more centered. But let me just say this. You know, I've been doing this a very long time. I have been seeing clients since 1976. It's a very, very long time. And over the years, there have been many changes in my sense of self in regard to my work. So at the beginning of the work that I did, I felt somewhat inadequate, that I had very few skills and the clients had very many needs, and that I had to be reminded and remind myself all the time that I couldn't know things I didn't know yet. And that everybody, as they enter into their new field, whether it's teaching or first-year teachers have a really hard time, or nursing, or, I mean, there's so much to learn, and you're not in school anymore, so people aren't cutting you so much slack, and there's so much to learn. And the more you learn, you really realize how much more there is to learn, and just overwhelming. So that's kind of the hard start stuff. Then there's that sense of, oh my God, no matter what I do, people aren't getting better. And that's striking and can be exhausting. And then you begin to have a sense that you have skills and people do get better, and they get better a little bit, or they get better and then they come back when they're able to take in more. And then you as an individual go through stages. I do remember right after my daughter was born being overly, having no armor. I mean, finding myself crying every day while a client was telling me a story that was touching. Although I still do that occasionally, people still tell me things that break my heart. Mm-hmm. And in a way, I never want that to go away. Not that I can reduce into tears and become an ineffective person,
right,
but knowing my own feelings has been unbelievably important. I think that's very, very important.
Absolutely.
I think you become brittle and break if you don't let people's let the pain of it in. But you also have to feel like you have skills and can literally affect people's lives. So that's been my transition through the years. There have been times where I've been more exhausted with work than other times. I've had to cut back on the number of hours I do because I don't have it in me to see 40 people anymore,
right,
where I used to be able to do that as a matter of course. I know that that life is a process. Our lives are a process. And so, given all of that, what I, you know, sort of said that, made that outline out loud. Tell me what your thoughts are. I know you've kind of codified this program to really try to get people through these stages. And I'd love to hear about that. So can you talk about that?
Sure. What you described is something that I'm watching play out almost in fast forward, and I don't exactly know the cause of that. I'm fairly new. I've just got, you know, a handful of years under my belt in the field. I'm surrounded by people that are you know, at the same step, at the same stage of their professional career in this field. And I'm watching that that initial exhilaration wane, and I'm watching people feel inadequate. The sad part is I'm watching people make decisions to leave the field, and it really inspired me to find out why and how to prevent it and retain this professional population of people, you know, to stop that domino effect of fallout. And, you know, it plays out pretty tragically for the clients as well. So the program and some of the fundamental concepts that I am really becoming committed to involve that, just that reframing your mind about results. Like I mentioned earlier, you're just a part of the process. You can't expect and you certainly can't demand results. You are one piece of a very large puzzle. And there are some techniques that I encourage people. We've all heard, I know that in my undergraduate and graduate education, we were talked at a lot about self-care and some of the more generic methods by which you can take care of yourself to offset it, which are tried and true, certainly. Healthy lifestyle, healthy diet, exercise, meditation, all of those things that pay homage to who you are and what you do.
I don't underestimate those things.
Right, not at all.
Not at all. Because if you are in the health, if you are in the healthcare profession, if you are in the mental health profession, if you are a hands-on provider of care, and you are not eating properly, sleeping enough, exercising, and having joy in your life, you cannot do this work.
It's very true. And if anyone is so inspired to do research on their own, you will learn that true compassion fatigue is acute. It presents without warning, and it leaves you very confused about why you can't function at the level that you were before. So it's something you really want to be aware of can happen, you know, in a day, in a week. It leaves you kind of rendered, you know, helpless in many ways professionally. So I do support all those methods to offset, and as well as something else that's a big part, a big component of this profession and fending off compassion fatigue is that piece about processing and debriefing with colleagues, just sharing what you went through, decisions that you made, which, you know, I certainly know the value of. And just kind of an alternative swing on that is to share and process with individuals outside of this profession, because I think we would all like to believe that we are altruistic, and I think that that's a piece of what we do, but we certainly want recognition. And we want, you know, a frame of reference, a realistic way to measure what we've done. And we want to, you know, be able to understand that this is an honorable profession, that we put ourselves out there. I know colleagues, coworkers that are often in dangerous situations even. So it's not a typical day at work for a lot of people. It taps into emotional stores, you know, physical, your compassion, your empathy, sympathy, all of those things are taxed daily. So it's important to, you know, to kind of keep all of those things in check, which may sound unrealistic, but...
But they're not unrealistic. So you're saying make sure you debrief with colleagues, get the supervision that you need if
Absolutely.
You need it. Direction is always good. And it's also good to talk about what you do, perhaps not the clients you see and talk to, but what you do with people outside of the profession, because it gives you a different perspective,
exactly,
is what you're saying.
Exactly.
I love that. That's really good. So, and tell me a little bit about what you said about the compassion fatigue, that it's like comes on like
Right, like, right. It stands alone outside of burnout. People refer to burnout, and burnout is usually slow to present, and you'll feel a little bit, you know, unenthusiastic or call out on a day just because you need to recharge, which is pretty typical. Compassion fatigue is said to present acutely, literally on any given day. You do not feel like yourself. You don't feel
like anxiety.
It's like anxiety, which you know well. Anxiety can send people to the emergency room, believing they're having a heart attack. So, it's serious in nature. I want to do my best to prevent people from being, giving way to it and leaving the profession.
And then getting cynical.
And that's the worst part. Because
oh, yes,
so many
is.
People count on us. And I want to inspire people to stay the course and remind them why they chose this profession in the first place.
You know what? I love that. You'd like to inspire people. And we have to keep reminding ourselves why we chose this profession in the first place. I think a little bit of, for me, if I had to spend like one day working in the corporate world, I would be able to remind myself right away.
I agree.
That the excitement and the honor of spending time with people who will share their lives with us at the level at which our clients share their lives with us, to me, is phenomenal. And all these years later, it's not any less phenomenal to
right.
me.
Right.
But I've had all those feelings that you just described. So even if somebody needed to go talk to their own therapist, they should not be against that. You're saying that too.
Oh,
yes.
Not at all. That's key. I mean, it really is. You need someone to help gauge where you are. You need to be reminded, what an admirable job you do and how much it can take out of you.
I think it is important. Actually, no matter what you do for a living, I think somebody ought to admire you. And
right.
I always think, why do all those actors and actresses get medals and television shows? And, no one's ever given me a medal for showing up at work.
That's a shame.
I know. I'm thinking we should have the Academy Awards of Social Work.
I agree.
Let's do it. Kelly, you are very, very kind to come today. And if anybody would like more information about what Kelly's doing, her information will be on my website. And you're welcome to go to that just by going to www.wrir.com. And you can then click on my show and see my website and get Kelly's information. I really appreciate you coming. I like talking about this. Of course I do. It feels very personal, really. And I hope that you'll come back again. And I wish you luck with your new job.
Thank you so much.
And for everybody else, we're going to talk about mentoring next week with Claudia Bigler. And I'm very excited about that. So I hope you'll listen to Mental Health Matters next Thursday at 1 o'clock. Thanks.
Be happy. In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry you make it double.